Order, stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve accounts payable. That would be accounts payable cycle date 128 through 125, excuse me, 121 through 125. $844,421.72, noting that the county manager has reviewed and approved such.
Second.
Discussion.
Yes, we accounts payable. We still have some accounts payable from 2018 budget, as well as some for 2019 budget. From the 2018 budget, we have payment to Action Services, Inc., and this is for the facilities management budget. And the fairgrounds, and it used a sewer camera inspection project, $2,715 to do the video and of the sewer lines. Payment to Baseline Engineering Corporation. This is also from facilities management at the fairground, and this is for planning for the restroom site. It's a GIS conceptual plan, $2,521.25. Payment to the town of Hayden is from YVRA, and this is from December 2018 law enforcement services provided by the town at the airport. The payment is $6,672.22. Also, we had the final distributions. I think I said that last time. Distribution of our dedicated mill levies for developmental disabilities and museum and heritage tax funds. Payments to those entities that receive those funds. Payment to the Historical Society of Oak Creek in Pittsburgh. This is also from the Museum and Heritage Tax Fund, but this is for a capacity building grant. This is their Bucket Park retaining wall, $15,922. Payment to Western Security. This is building a plant pool. This is a payment for detention fire alarm upgrade, detention facility fire alarm upgrade, $49,244.88. Payment to Slate Communications is from the BCC office budget, and this is this design the county flicker site and other services that Slate provided at the end of last year. Payment of $6,000. Payment to CDW LLC. This is from the IT capital pool. This is for, get this, a micro semi-sync server. I have not the foggiest idea, but it's $4,725 for that piece of equipment. Payment to Murphy Sanders, Inc. This is one from the YVRA budget, and Murphy Sanders is doing the website design for the airport. Payment of $3,600. Then a couple items from the 2019 budget. We had our first month distribution of payments, budgeted payments to other agencies that receive funding from Brown County. Those include like the district attorney's office and other payments that we make through our community services budget, as well as HRC, Human Resource Coalition funding. And we make those payments directly to each one of these entities. Payment to Cybernetics. This is from the IT budget. And this is an annual maintenance service for our backup service. And this is for January of 2019, $5,565. Then finally, a payment to Motorola Solutions. This is for the Comm Center pool and the purchase of the E911 phone system replacement. And this is for 25% of the total contract cost. This payment, $97,077.64. That total contract is $388,000.
Thank you.
Consent agenda items?
We didn't vote yet. Oh, sorry.
I forgot.
I lost my train of thought for a second.
He rolled on with
some. He's just really excited. All right. All in favor of approving the... whatever we just
accounts payable.
Thank you. Accounts payable. Say aye.
List should get shorter next month.
No, it's all good. I got lost in the middle. I forgot what we were doing. And updates from yesterday's work session. We had an update from the county manager, from the attorney's office, an environmental health update, and an update from the fairgrounds. There were no decisions made yesterday. All right, I'm ready for the consent agenda.
So I'm going to pull item B. So I'll make a motion to approve item A. So, Madam Chair, I move to approve consent agenda item A.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Discussion
and then I guess
of
I'm
item
going,
B.
Go ahead and make a motion to get item B on the table and second it, and then do discussion.
Yes, let me. I sent an email to Kelly asking her to be here. She, I don't see that she even picked it up yet, so I'll find out if
she's available.
I'll give her a call.
Okay.
We'll only get a motion on the table anyway.
Well, either that or we can just hang off. At least we have a few minutes. We could even table it until maybe Kelly. If we need to have Kelly have a discussion with us about it, so maybe. I mean, we just hold off at least.
Just table it momentarily.
Comment, you know.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move to table consent agenda item B until later in the day when we've had an opportunity to hear from our Human Services Director.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. To look at nomination of members to serve on the 14th Judicial District Juvenile Services Planning Committee.
Yes. So potential candidates to Judge O'Hare. In the 14th Judicial Services, and he then will choose either one or more of the nominees to serve on this 14th Judicial Service Planning Committee. In previous year, Mike Seidinger was our representative, and since he's retired, you had suggested Grace Levine and Kelly Keats. So I'm here to ask you to formally make those two recommendations, and then we will take that to Judge O'Hare.
With a letter from us signed by our chair, is that what that is going to be?
No, it's less formal. An email from our attorney will suffice. That's what
less
he said.
Formal, an email from an attorney.
Yes.
Okay, I just figured.
Is that more or less formal? I don't know. That,
yeah, so. You know, it's not a letter. It's just according to Eric, he just sends an email to Judge O'Hare that you made the nominations, and then make the appointments.
I had a question about this. So the communication form that you said that the MOU says at least three people.
Correct.
Nominated.
That is, I think, when originally the board started, we had to at least have three nominations. And right now we have Mick Hale is also on that committee. Tom Gangle and Mike Seidinger. So at the previous nominations, we had submitted, I think, three. And
well, it could be construed to be one nomination from each county.
Yeah.
I know. I was a little confused about the language, too.
Yeah.
Well, but it says
at least three persons for appointment.
But it says the boards for each of the counties nominate, and so each of the counties to me means that each county nominates three people. I guess my question is, are we supposed to have a third person on here according to our MOU?
So do we really have an MOU with the judge? I don't think we do.
I'm just going based on a direction from our attorney.
MOU. It from us, and we don't really know, and the judge has taken it over.
I would say that the judge bears the responsibility for making the determination of whether or not we've provided enough nominations.
Yeah, so he wants to hear a little input from us, and he holds the ultimate cards.
Yes.
Which he does say that because he selects from the nominees.
And so we already have Mick Hale on that committee as also our other representative.
But we don't include him in this representation. We don't include her in this representation.
No, because she's already there. Already there.
Well,
got it.
This one is just to
perfect. It sounds
to,
like
Replace Mike.
Replace Mike, yeah.
Okay.
It's mostly that.
Okay.
And I advised Eric that we only had two to nominate, and he was fine with that.
Then I'm fine with it.
They also can walk away from our nominations.
Yeah. Well, it says that here. Select all or some. It doesn't say none,
though.
He
made that quite clear.
Okay. Well, I'm ready for a motion.
So, Madam Chair, I move that we send a notification to Chief Justice O'Hare that our nominations for the Juvenile Services Planning Commission be Grace Levine and Kelly Keith on behalf of the Robb County Board of County Commissioners' recommendations.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you very much.
Thank you. Adjourn as the Board of County Commissioners and reconvene as the Board of Public Health. If you can have that, thank you.
Yay.
Here we are. Here we are. We look the same, but we're the Board of Health now. So my understanding is that this is just an update meeting and that we don't have any action items. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, then I'll just let you. Should I run through this agenda? Is that what you'd like to do?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Great.
Well, they have it in already, too.
So perfect.
They
well,
Scott.
Then they sent.
They
the agenda that you sent.
Scott
yes.
Off.
Great. I'll let Scott lead off.
So
thanks, Scott.
Arrived.
Well, all right.
Met Brian, then?
I haven't. We
haven't.
Sorry.
Yes.
Hi, Brian.
Brian.
Beth.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Good luck that I printed out.
Thanks, Scott.
The agenda.
And I think you've met Carrie.
Yes.
Yes.
We
met.
So, very good.
Okay. So we... have a quarterly Board of Health meeting as specified in our agreement with Northwest Colorado Health that provides our public health services. And so this is the first meeting of 2019, and we've provided an agenda and presentation that should be a part of your packet. I'm happy to go run off some copies of this if that would help.
We got it all here.
And I guess...
Well, there was quite a few pages. I think we're good.
Oh, well, I also included, mostly for Beth, since she is new, our contract, our annual contract, and then also the five-year master contract. And I can't remember if I provided
the legislation, and there were
yeah.
a bunch of documents.
So it's just for your information and just
overwhelming. Well, I read them
with like
thoroughly.
200 pages of, yeah, super interesting
really
stuff.
Really interesting.
there's Stephanie on the
phone. Hi, Stephanie.
And so with that,
you can just bring that over here, Stephanie. Why don't you bring that over here and sit over next to Ryan?
Or really wherever you want. You don't have to let Doug tell you where to sit.
Yeah.
Have you met
so nice and comfortable here.
No, but Beth can tell you where to sit.
I can tell you that you can sit wherever the hell you want.
There you go.
Strength.
So we also have Stephanie Einfeld, who is CEO of Northwest Colorado Health. And with that, I will turn it over to Carrie Ladro, who is our public health director.
Sure. Well, thanks for having us, first of all.
Yeah.
Always happy to be here, and welcome to Beth. The first slide that I sent, I just wanted to sort of recap on what the core public health services are. And this presentation is broken out by what we're in public health doing to address each of those core public health services. So that first, I know the other commissioners have seen it, and everyone at the table has seen it, but I thought maybe just
yep.
as an orientation.
Well. Yep.
Yeah. So as far as the assessment, planning, and communication, we're heavily involved right now in the CHAPS process. So that's the Community Health Assessment Planning System. And when we met last, we talked about how exactly do we want to strategize this moving forward. Do we want to do it as a big regional plan with Moffitt, Jackson, and Robb counties all together? Or do we want to do it as a regional plan with separate breakout sessions, work groups for each county, or do we want to do it entirely different? So Moffitt has one, Robb has one, and Jackson has one as far as these community health assessment planning projects. And so we did a doodle poll, and then I asked the Board of Health in each county, and the consensus was that we want to do a regional plan, but then have county-specific work groups. So those breakout work groups will talk about strategies, talk about what we want to focus on out of those two big categories of mental health and physical security that were already identified. So it may look the same for each county, but it may look different depending on what those work groups identify. And so that's where we're at in the planning process moving forward. Do you have any questions about that? I know that's it's a huge focus for public health to get this this project done, and our goal is to have it done by June of 2019, so this coming June.
How frequently do you do this process?
How
often are you
supposed to do
this? Yeah, every 5 years. Yeah.
And does it take the whole 5 years to get it done?
I would say so.
Yeah.
What we've really been focusing on is making sure it's meaningful this time, because I think historically sometimes it gets done and then no one really looks at it. It's just not a working document, and what we want to move away from is that. We want to make sure that it's something that's meaningful for the communities. As a sort of a side note on the CHOPS process, we have a whole bunch of different projects that are going on in the community. So UC Health has a hospital transformation project they're working on. So does, and since we serve also Moffitt County, MRH also has one. There's a community voice project. We really want to align and pull all those different projects together and make sure that we're being strategic and using everyone's time and also establishing priorities as a community. So we've pulled all that together, and we're working with those different partners in the community on this process.
The larger community.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's an efficiency of scale by doing a region-wide plan with county-level projects.
And I've heard different feedback. Some folks feel very strongly that, like in Moffitt County, they feel very strongly that their priorities may be different and their strategies may be different from Rout County and the same. And so really honoring that, but then also being, we have the resources we have to work on this project. And so being thoughtful and strategic about how can we maximize those resources in this project. So
how are these priorities identified, mental health and physical security?
So we did a data analysis. We've pulled a whole bunch of, we have somebody that's working on this project from Northwest Colorado Health, but then we also have resources of the state too that pull data for us. And so as a group, we looked at data and really analyzed it to kind of break down what the priority should be. And we have a steering committee, which is part of the larger CHAPS committee, and using the data analysis to figure those out.
Mm-hmm. And I would add as well, the last community health needs assessment that was done in the community was 3 years ago, and that kind of went into that overall thinking as well.
And can you define physical security for me in this context?
Yeah. Really, it's making sure that people feel safe in their environment. So that could be anything from environmental health is a big component for that, for home safety, air quality, physical security as far as, let's say, with early childhood, making sure that children have a safe environment where they're being raised. It's pretty broad, and it's broad intentionally just to make sure that people, as these communities dig more into the data, if it's unintentional injury, which was part of our last one, then that could be part of physical security as well, and we can sort of scope it down from these broader categories.
Got it.
Do you have anything? You've been a big part of all of this. Do you have anything you want to add from the environmental health side?
Oh, I think you covered it pretty well.
Okay.
And we met yesterday and talked ad nauseum about the environmental health program.
Great.
So I'm all filled in.
I wasn't nauseous.
Yeah. So that's our process. And as we get these regional work groups going, we're going to have some more data to share with you, and I'll share it as we go. And obviously, if you have questions, please ask.
I'm sorry. And we're staying involved in that process. Tim has been to one meeting. That was a while ago, but I continue to stay involved.
Yeah. Do you have anything you want to add, Dr. Harrington?
Well, only just that this tends to bleed out beyond just kind of papers published for the county. Remember the last assessment, it kind of permeated different things in the community, and there were other organizations that picked up on pieces of it to target some of their activities for health in the community. So it's driven by this process, but a lot of non-governmental or at least non-county activities end up taking this information because there isn't another source for it and using it. So it's one of those things I think that the county supports that really has a multiplying in the community in various ways.
Well, we want to be privy to what's happening out there as well as the Board of Health, too. So, I mean, we're supposed to be the Board of Health. And again, sometimes, I mean, we're having these discussions about this opioid thing that was supposed to be gotten a whole bunch of money out of last year's legislature that would have been nothing after the legislature passed. You know, we didn't hear nothing about it.
I had a conversation with Stephanie about that on Friday.
Yeah, so that's kind of frustrating for us.
The medication-assisted treatment.
And again, we know you guys are on the front lines of all this stuff.
I know some about it,
so communication's key to us to understand what's happening on the front line as well.
I think there have also been questions, you know, about just the mental health services that are available to people within the community through the various entities that provide them, and what those look like, and understanding that.
I had a conversation with Stephanie about that on Friday as well.
So I think we'll welcome this information to understand some of those things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we're happy to share more of involvement in projects as they come up, and more of what we hear. I think that's part of like building this relationship, is just knowing that you guys want to know some of the things that are going on out there, and how can we help inform you?
Well, especially
whether
when we
it's
get
in this
asked
or
about
another
it.
Way. Yeah,
you know, like with this MAT, we were asked how the pilot program has gone and whether we would recommend expansion of that program, and we had no information to provide.
Perhaps.
And we had a hard time tracking it down.
Yeah, perhaps we need to meet and talk more frequently. You know, we meet on a quarterly basis at this point, but we could talk about meeting on a monthly basis while this CHAPS process is going on. Or,
well, I think you could probably provide that information in your updates without necessarily dragging these guys in every time.
Yeah, okay. I would think that'd be good too.
Well, and I think that as those
goes outside that scope of public health too.
Yeah.
So, what are those community actors that are going outside of Carrie's world? Maybe it's more about the agency updating you or whatever that. Whatever that looks like, because there's more going outside than just the
public. Well, that's a good, I mean, that was kind of the question I had on Friday. Is opioid treatment in our lane as the Board of Public Health?
It's
is it in your lane as your responsibilities of providing the services to us?
I will say that it was declared a national public health crisis. So.
Yeah, I would have said before you even asked. But what we do, we don't know what we do. We don't know what we should do because we don't even know how bad the crisis is. So, you know.
Well, there's data.
There's communication.
Talks about how bad the crisis is.
We're not restricted to quarterly meetings either. So if there are topics that we want to bring up, then you know, you as Board of Health are meant to provide direction to the public health program. So you know, if there are things you need information about or want to engage on more frequently than the quarterly meetings, it's not a big deal. But I think they're down the street, you know, so we can reach out to Carrie and pull that information together.
Or, you know, we could have a public health update on a monthly basis that isn't this Board of Health meeting, similar to the environmental health update. But it sounds like we need to have more frequent communication. That's what I'm hearing.
Well, I think also just knowing, I mean, I don't know who gathers that type of information, like coordination of services around opioid treatment, for example. I mean, is that you on behalf of us, or does anyone do that?
So you're asking the same question I just asked.
Yeah.
So I think Steph probably can speak to the opioid side as far as the agency.
And that's sort of just as an example, right? There might be other topics that fall in that same, have the same question about.
You were going to say something.
Well, I'm just thinking in terms, I mean, there's 101 things that are being assessed. If you have ideas of things that are coming up for you, you know, there could be a target of three. I mean, if you do three things, great. Pick down the opioid crisis point.
Right.
Maybe that's a standing committee issue that we talk about it every time, because it has been and will continue to be a big issue. We've actually, you know, 2 years ago, we had 19 deaths from overdoses in the county. We had those numbers. We had four last year. This year, I think one I know of. That is
this
different.
Year, like 2019?
I'm sorry, 2019.
Oh, okay.
That's different from saying that we have less opioid problems. It just means that our law enforcement and our emergency responders have been deploying Narcan a lot. It's hard to tease into that a little bit to understand if we're going to decrease the problem. We've just addressed it in a way that's save some deaths, but was kind of the same.
So we can hear what we want to hear if we want to hear what we don't hear. But
I mean, I think
that
that's
might
a success,
not be the total situation.
But we,
we put a band-aid on the problem, or we don't.
Well, it's a success in preventing one outcome. I mean, it's not preventing some of the other outcomes.
Yeah, but we heard during the discussion with our jail people, the problem is there's no therapy after, or no continued therapy during that whole time.
Yeah, they
too,
talked so. About that. So to your point, we could identify some priorities that we maybe want to hear updates about and have conversations about on a more regular basis if there are things.
Well, it's not just updates. I mean, these are the CHAPS is meant to provide action. So, identify the data, what the risk factors are, and what we want to work on, and so you can direct action, and then we can have updates about those actions.
Yeah. So that might be something to consider, how that comes out through this process, maybe. Is that really the best way probably to go about that? Mm-hmm. Makes sense to me.
And I also think it's helpful as you gain trust. I mean, you put this hat on for an hour, quarter, or I mean, it's now you're relatively important. There's a lot that you have going on. You have to trust your contract agency, those other people and your staff to be kind of doing the program. And so I think as you hear about it, you gain that trust that, yes, things are being looked into and dealt with and all, because there's a lot that goes on, an awful lot, and you can't spend all your time.
Well, we also have a separate agency called Mind Springs that I think we've thought was addressing these issues.
We have lots of separate agencies, as is the case in healthcare.
Which is a nice tie-in to the next topic. If we great, go ahead.
Well done.
Well, I mean, and I would just say, like you asked, is that are we the convener? Is that us to kind of have our finger on the pulse of behavioral health? And I, Tim and I had a great conversation, and it really opened my eyes to when you asked the question, do you consider yourselves in the world of behavioral health and have a responsibility in it? I kind of listed out the behavioral health services that we do and where we're moving, and for you guys to not know that, it just opens the door of like, okay, we need to share everything else that we do as an organization, and then the things that come up around the community in the world of health and wellness that are going on, like this big, the state grant. I didn't know about that state grant either. We talked about this, but when stuff like that comes up, I agree that you guys should be at the table and involved and so I think it's good to just keep that in mind on my side.
It's interesting when we look at this matrix that we don't see the word mental health in there. We see population level prevention and control, which I guess mental health would fall within that that category.
Yeah, if it's not.
But it's not overtly
stated. But
it's
not an obvious thing. Yeah. Right, exactly.
And I want to be clear, too, that public health is the prevention side of things. It's the upstream. And it's not healthcare. That's the direct service provision. And I feel like it gets a little confused sometimes. And I think that delineation is important in this conversation.
That makes perfect sense, what you just said.
Yeah. I think also it's valuable for us to be able to share the things that are coming to us as questions, and because these mental health conversations are coming up all over the place, everywhere, not just with opioids, but also, with other types of substance abuse and mental health more broadly. So we hear things from various directions as well, and like from the jail, for example, and the challenges there, and having some of those back and forth conversations, I think, is probably really important. As I'm learning and understanding what this is exactly, but
that is a great distinction that you just made. It helps me understand that you guys are prevention upstream, and so by the time we get to opioid abuse, it's in a different dimension altogether.
So the CHAPS June timeframe for completion. Mm-hmm. Can you quickly summarize like the opportunities for input before then in terms of the plan?
Well, so the idea is that we're going to have the county specific work groups, and then my plan is, if you're agreeable to this, is then to submit back to each Board of Health what the recommendations for those work groups are of the strategies and what interventions they would like to see, and have exactly what we just had with the regional plan discussion of, is that, are you in agreement, are we in alignment with moving forward with those specific strategies and priorities? Yeah.
spring kind of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if that sounds like a good plan, we can go forward with that.
Sounds great.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay, we're ready.
You can keep going.
Okay.
Keep going.
So the next
So wait a minute. So how do you prevent bad mental health?
Well, I think
that's a really loaded question.
That is a loaded question, right?
Depends on how broad and flat you want to go.
But I mean, but right here, you're talking about mental health and physical security are these priorities, and then you've further stated that you guys are upstream in prevention.
Yeah. So I think there are lots of different variables. I think Dr. Harrington can probably speak to this as well. But we, in the public health world, we're really concentrating on children and making sure they have the resiliency skills that they need and the coping mechanisms as they grow older in order to try to mitigate some of these issues as they come their way. I think that's early childhood intervention is really such a key, crucial 10-year, 12-year, 15-year plan that we're focusing on.
Yeah, that plays dividends just down the road. But, you know, looking at toxic stress, you know, this concept of what the environment is for kids as they grow up and whether they have food insecurity, you know, home insecurity, all those things play into that. I think when we get to the adult stage, then it is a lot more treatment or early identification, so you can do more benign treatments. But if you're involved at the early stage in the environment with kids, then you're going to have a bigger impact down the road, and that's what a lot of the programs are. And, you know, we have our Grand Future. We have other groups in town doing all those things, but that's a key part.
Really speaks to that contract we tabled.
Yes. Well, and you can speak. I mean, you can also speak about things like preventing suicide, preventing some negative outcomes, which are still on the prevention side, even if there's some overlap, I would think.
So the bottom line, though, your contract that you're talking about, that's still the secondary stage thing. What these guys are talking about, the healthy environment, you know, a healthy living place, and all the stuff that Scott went over yesterday, that's what they're talking about. I mean,
yeah,
my
but that
mind,
contract, that counseling portion, yeah, but that that's contract, still a, family counseling.
Yeah, but that's still a secondary after you've already identified an issue in the situation.
That's true.
And again, I think what these guys, I know I'm getting melded into the system here. I'm believe in the belief, you know.
Drinking the Kool-Aid.
Recognizing their learning investments.
But anyhow, it just goes to a healthy community to start with, and healthy relationships around you, and healthy people, and family,
healthy
and all those things that
will contribute to mental health. Yeah.
So anyhow,
And
drinking the Kool-Aid.
One of the things I'd like to do, too, is do a return on investment presentation of really these public health strategies. What do we get back as communities? What is the dollar savings? Because ultimately, that is a obviously, the human side is the priority for many of us. But there also is a financial side to it, too. So making sure that we're presenting that, too. So moving on to communicable disease prevention, investigation, and control. So I spoke to you last time I was here about the CIDR team. So we put together the Community Infectious Disease Emergency Response Team. One of the things that I think was a big concern is the lack of cohesiveness amongst the medical community to identify and communicate and prevent communicable diseases and community infectious diseases. So this CIDR team, we have separate CIDR teams. We have one in Moffitt County and one in Rout County as well. But the intention is to work with our resources that we have at CDPHE, who really analyze and track communicable disease data to identify what some of our trendings are, some of our risks, and then also have a communication pattern between all of us. If there is to be an outbreak, how do we get in contact with the right people in a timely way and get the information out? So I think that's there's a lot of work to be done, but the steps that have been taken so far is that we're having these CIDR team meetings. Environmental health is part of it. Mo has been part of it here. We set up with Jason Nettles. We set up a little Everbridge or Rout County alert system, so that either Jim Johnson or members of the CIDR team can get information out quickly through the Rout County alert system. So we've been working really closely with them to make sure that information is communicated out quickly.
one of the things that we're doing in our next meeting, which is on the 22nd here, this is, I can just show it to you, but basically this is an assessment, a risk assessment of communicable diseases in the community, and so we are assessing with our providers. We're trying to get some buy-in, which maybe Dr. Harrington can help with this, but some buy-in from our providers and from community partners on what are our biggest risks for communicable disease. So some of these on here are respiratory aerosols, emerging zoonosis, well-borne pathogens, whatever it is. And the gist of this matrix is that we rank those and work with the data, obviously, and identify what are our biggest risks as a community, and then develop a plan as a team to how are we going to mitigate those. So that's a big project, but it's definitely, I think it's a needed project for all of our communities to make sure that we have the right resources in place. And also, I've noticed a huge difference in the communication between, like, let's say UC Health. They sent us an update about the flu. Hey, we have a flu. We have an active flu case. Wanted to make sure that you're aware. We've really developed this communication pattern between the providers, and so as far as for the public health nurses, making sure that they are staying on top of what they need to for surveillance. All of that connecting the dots is happening in a really nice way that I don't think historically we've had a ton of luck with. Do you have anything you want to?
Well, I just have a big risk. A few years ago, I remember the H1N1 flu thing, and we actually had, I remember, discussions here about how we're going to pre-position our Tamiflu and all that kind of stuff. So occasionally we'll have these kind of big national things. But we're at risk here as a tourist town. You know, every bug in the world comes here. So, you know, you read this week about the latest measles outbreak in Washington. Mm-hmm. That could be here. And that's pretty, it's a pretty dramatic thing. And so how do we identify that? How would we respond? We'd obviously have help from the state public health department for some of these things. We would get in here at some point. But how would we respond urgently to figure that out and quarantine somebody that got measles or spread around? We got to have that. And hopefully we don't ever have to use that kind of stuff. But we got work to do on that. The challenge in a lot of our things is public health tends to be fits separately from clinical care. To some degree, that's correct because the majority of health is outside of the clinical office. But yet, for a lot of these things, just like we talked before about, you know, foodborne illnesses. How do we know if we had an outbreak at one of the restaurants around here? Well, those people are going to go to the ERs or to the primary care docs, but are those people reporting, and how do we see that when it occurs? So that's the kind of stuff we still have to work on.
How are we doing on immunizations?
We're doing well. We had, actually today you probably heard on the radio, the measles PSA. We put a PSA out, Northwest Colorado Health, about that. One of the things I think that we still have opportunity for is that education on the front end. We do have a contingency of people who are anti-vaccination, and so really making sure that we're educating on the front end of any of these outbreaks. So we're out there doing flu clinics. We're doing a lot of travel immunizations. I mean, we have a really active nursing staff.
So in the state of Washington, like you pointed out, they know that they have this significant percentage of kids that are not immunized. Do we actually have those real numbers for Rock County?
Yeah, okay. We do. I don't have them with me, but we do.
And where do you get those? Access. Who provides them?
CDPHE is who we've gotten those from.
Mm-hmm. They put that out each year, usually.
How do they get that information? Does it come from the schools or from where does it come from?
I think it comes through the schools.
So, the school requirement's a major source of that information because that kind of is the central port. We've had a statewide immunization registry that sometimes works, sometimes doesn't, but I think the school thing is the biggest thing because they've got reports from that each county of kind of what our rates. And ours is, I'm trying to remember, where we were somewhere kind of in the middle. We weren't bad. We weren't as good as I'd like us to be.
Yeah. And certainly in an outbreak, that would be a concern. I'm really excited about the CIDR team. I think we have a lot of great work that we can do together and connecting dots and making sure that we are prepared should, you know, God forbid that there is some type of outbreak, we'll be as prepared as we possibly can be. So as far as the flu, we have had one hospitalization for influenza. We had 5 hospitalizations last year. And I think you mentioned this before, Dr. Harrington, but H1N1 is the most commonly circulating flu in the state of Colorado.
Last year was in this flu season or in the past flu season?
What's that?
last year's hospitalizations, was that this flu season or in the past year?
Yeah, I think that was for this year. That number, I mean, anecdotally, I know a couple others that aren't getting into our system. Just this week, there was somebody from in for something else, and they turned positive. But, yeah, it's been, you know, nationwide, we reflect that it's about a quarter or a third of what flu numbers were the previous year. So it's been a better year.
And do you look at the calendar year, or you look at it, like, from the fall to the spring?
We look at it seasonally from the flu clinic side of things.
Yeah.
So we obviously are still pushing. It's not too late to get a flu vaccine, and we have some publicity out about that. I'm really trying to make sure people get the shot if they haven't yet. So we're trying to mitigate that as much as possible. And then as far as environmental health, I thought we could talk about the radon campaign that moved. Do you
want
to talk about that, or do you want me to?
Well, I guess I can talk a little bit about it and
sure.
fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
We recognizing that January was Radon Awareness Month, I had talked to Susie Romick from YVSC about putting out some information, and then connected her with Carrie. And we ended up having a nice article in the paper about radon awareness and some of the resources that are out there to get radon testing. And I can't remember what else.
Why don't you help me out? What are the specific health risks associated with radon exposure?
Lung cancer.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that ties back to that healthy environment. And so one of the things we were able to do, which is a nice example of the partnership with Environmental Health, is our home visitor program. So we have NFP and Safe Care, we have home health, we have a whole bunch of folks who are going into homes. We were able to do some education on radon and help to connect with these resources through Scott and through his team. And so I think that was a nice example of how we can work together to try to maximize what resources that we have, and as information comes through, getting it out to the people that are actually in the homes, visiting with people.
And connection to some other activities that are going on in the state, and some grant funding to help support education and also testing kits.
Yeah.
So
the only problem with this thing's been going on for, you know, years and years, and our home extension
agent? Karen.
Karen, yeah, she was doing this all along too. We don't have any numbers out there. Nobody knows it's a crisis, or if it even is a crisis. And so, you know, we keep waving the flag here. Well, this is really, really bad, really, really bad. And I bet there's not enough kids sent out to. I mean, even with the increased communication effort that's being made in it, I've never heard of one
what
building that had radon problem.
No, I can tell you quite a few.
Okay, well that'd be good. I mean, so what's missing.
Yeah. We did in our house too, and then you know they're in the new building regulations. They're required as part of the 2015 building regulations to put in that infrastructure. In construction
to
new first buildings.
To get the air.
Mitigation system.
Yeah, to get the stuff out of there.
And this area is high.
Yeah. Well, and you know, now they pretty much paint the whole state of Colorado red, but before they did that, we were still in that zone. But we have a lot of uranium.
And I'll be slightly facetious here. You know, our home inspectors, this is one of the key things they do to kind of give value to what they're doing, is every home gets a radon test, which is actually a good public health thing. You know, the standard is you're supposed to have your radon below like 4 parts, I forget the measurement, it's like 4.
Or parts per million or?
Yeah, whatever. And, you know, just about all the time it's a little bit above it. Now, if you're 6 or 7, how big of a risk is that? We don't know. But there's enough population data to show that those with higher exposure have a higher risk of especially lung cancers and some other things too. But it's a definite health link. And it's pretty easy to mitigate it, right? You know, you do some of the air movement stuff and all in the homes, and you can make a real difference. So it's one of those things that we can find it early. We think there's a biological connection and a risk, and there's something to do about it. And it's not that expensive, usually. So.
Especially if you do it while you're constructing your house and you don't retrofit. So it's kind of a no-brainer to have that in the building code around here.
I mean, no, I understand that, but if you're living in a 1920 house or a 1945 house,
and you don't have good ventilation and you have a basement,
the mitigation there is iffy. It's hard. I mean, it's expensive, right?
Oh, do you know anybody with a 1920 house?
Your house, my house.
Yeah, he's got a door house. Mine's 1901.
Well, you guys have probably passed the point of no return.
It's not something that shows up right away. It's kind of like asbestos. It doesn't show up for several years later.
I mean, my mom lives in a newer condo complex here. It's an active issue for them right now. They're in the midst of how to mitigate it for all the units.
I was really interested in how
they're all going to run out of cash.
They have a minute. Where are the free ones?
I think Extension still has some free ones.
Okay.
And so that's the information that we put in the paper.
Actually, I think get them right now. I've already done this. I'm going to check it. Yeah. I'm just ignorant of what goes on in my own home.
But we should probably have some other outlets. Like, I thought that you guys had an outlet for free kits, but not currently.
We got one in the mail. Someone,
right. Oh, and that's another way you can get one is you can request one.
Because he didn't know I'd already done it.
So
just one more thing to be paranoid about. Okay.
So where does the funding for that program come from for the radon kits? Who's paying for those?
There is a state grant right now that allows you to order one online.
And do you pay to return it and get the results, or it's free? The whole thing is free.
I think the whole thing is free. Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
And so it's, you know, it's an upstream thing. We have this need, and here's the grant money, and you can take advantage of it.
Does the kit produce the results in your home, or do you have to send a kit back in?
I think you have to send a kit back in.
Yeah.
And then if you get a high result, I think the recommendation is that you do some additional testing, and there's different complexity, and, you know, there's tests that you can do that provide more solid information. So it depends on what levels you're getting with that original test kit. Sure, those are meant to be sort of not super complex.
In terms of bang for the buck, I actually think it's one of the kind of more tangible things that you guys can get involved in. Mm-hmm. In terms of what is being done and what's achieved. Because you measure it surely directly, I think.
And that may come into the
I'm still struggling. So.
Well, and if it's not something...
And so then you get a guy comes in and he got lung cancer. Well, you don't know whether it's from smoking or whether he's, you know, it's been radon or whatever in the past.
And so up to 20% of lung cancers are non-smokers. And this is believed to be one of the main risk factors.
Yeah, I'm sure you can draw correlations.
That's that population level data.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This group, it's not exactly that.
It's never one-to-one.
Good.
Okay. I just wanted to tell you, and you may already be aware of this, that we did a exercise at the airport on communicable disease. If a plane were to, you know about this already, if a plane were to arrive with a communicable disease on board, how would we handle it? And I thought it was really helpful. So we basically problem solved through this whole scenario. Would the plane be diverted? Would it land? And then how would we handle it? But it was a good community-wide effort, sort of around a public health topic, that we were able to come up with as the ESF-8 function of public health role, we were able to come up with how it would be handled and have some good discussions around that, too. So just wanted to update you on that.
And emergency preparedness is one of the core services
that
we're required to fulfill. And so that goes towards helping to fulfill that requirement. Mm-hmm.
As far as administration and governance, I don't know, as far as the medical officer update, is there anything we need to do today for Dr. Harrington's role, or do we...
Well, we need to update the agreement, and I think that we're pretty close to being able to provide the revised agreement to the board, which we can do, and then we can get that signed at our next quarterly meeting, or we could... get together sooner,
I think realistically, we just need to have some insurance coverage for him, for the services he's going to put on.
Yeah.
Talk to Eric about that.
And we had kind of tossed around a job duty list or just roles and responsibilities as a medical officer, and I think you felt comfortable with the list.
Yeah, I didn't see the car on there.
Sorry.
Guess that got left.
Yeah. So we can get that all tidied up.
Right. So we can probably get that in front of you guys pretty quick, and we should.
Yeah, and put it on the agenda.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't need to wait till the next
one. So are we not operating under one then?
We are.
We are.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, let's move it along.
Yep. Okay.
Do our part.
Okay. And then the MOU update?
That's a conversation that we still need to have. And, we got a letter from Anne-Marie at the state, and that ties into that MOU, and moving forward, we have to decide whether we want to do another MOU or perhaps a contract, which is a little bit more binding, and based on feedback from the state, to provide some more assurances in that contract or MOU about the requirements for delivery of those services. And so that's something that's in process and that we need to get together soon and
So how does that dovetail with the public health transformation, or does it? I mean, are they related?
No, I think specific to our agreements
and our model.
Practices.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's more just questions about how we function.
So, but let's not all three of us recreate the wheel here. I know you're working with Moffitt County and Don, same situation, correct?
Questions coming from CDPH. I think they got their own, and Moffitt County got questions as well because it's a similar model.
So, I know, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So we ought to not all recreate the mold here.
Well, I think there are specific questions for each organization, how we operate, but I think we probably can collaborate on some of it. I haven't seen their questions that Moffitt's received, so I don't know what we did.
So when you say we're working on it, who's we? Who is working on it?
Well, Carrie and I are working on it, and
we'll work on it.
Yeah.
Along with Eric.
Got it.
I got the copy of the letter on Monday, so we haven't had a chance to really talk about it at the staff level. Can we answer these questions quickly and provide that information? So that I think once we have a chance to talk to Eric, we'll be able to know better.
And once
some legal questions.
Right. And once we get some concurrence, then we'll be able to go back and update the MOU.
Concurrence from who?
I think the state would like us to address those questions. And I think that might affect
with you guys.
Right. And that might affect what goes into that new agreement.
Yeah, I how excited I am about having somebody tell me what to do. So, and again, things
they're from the state.
For us.
They're here to help you.
Yeah, no, and they're sending us so much money to do that.
Well, let's be clear. These are questions about operations. There's not any direction.
Yeah. So, and again, I'm fine. You guys muddle through this stuff a little bit, but push comes to shove, I have a good way of dragging feet, so here.
And I think these were the questions originally from the Board of Health, right? From their visit. Is that?
They're similar
to the Board of Health.
So is there, I can't recall when the MOU expires. Is there a timeline to get this done? Because kind of to Tim's point, if the health transformation project just changes what we need in our MOU 6 months after we've just redone our MOU, we'd want to be duplicative about it.
I don't think that that transformation process is going to affect what goes into our agreement. I think that what they're doing is they're making sure that they understand what all these services are and what the cost is to provide these services. And I think ultimately there'll be a request for some additional funding to help support those services. So I think that maybe that'll change in the long term. Would you agree with that as far as the transformation process?
Yeah, so I think that, I'm on the steering committee and went to Denver for the meeting. And I think basically they're looking at the foundational core services model and merging it with the public, this diagram that we've been looking at, and putting some more description around each of the services, and then also adding maternal child health to this core services that we're providing. They have identified that as a value. But I don't think, looking forward, it's going to change. It would change the dynamics of all of this, I don't think.
Right, because our MOU, or that agreement, just describes our relationship with Northwest Colorado Health and how we are delivering those services as required by statute.
So I have a question. The document that you included in our packet, the MOU, is about public health and nursing services. Is there a separate agreement, or is that what we're talking about?
It's some old language.
Okay.
Right, and that's part of what needs to be updated.
Okay. So it's not just nursing services.
Because prior to the Public Health Act, prior to the Public Health Act in 2008, that's what the county was, you know, that was the partnership with BNA for those types of services. And then, so some of the language in the MOU.
So there's some things that need to be updated here.
So, Carrie, on that steering committee that you're on, will that ultimately result in recommendations to the legislature, or is that just rule changes within CDPHE?
So right now they're just doing an initial rule change in order to be able to update that language, and that happens February 20th. They're going to do that proposal, and then I don't think it's going to move to the legislature side of things. It's again putting some more definition around it. One of the things that I thought you might be interested in is when we had the steering committee meeting, they asked for suggestions on what were the concerns about it, and I brought forward that it being a mandate but not putting dollars behind it, and they adopted that as their number one concern from the steering committee.
Well, good job.
So, no, I just...
I'm sure
they
ignore
all they want if they're paying for it.
Well, and
you know, and if they're not paying for it, they don't need a mandate. We'll fix a plan that's comfortable for us.
Right, and I heard that, and I've heard that at these previous meetings, and wanted to make sure that you knew that I voiced that when I went.
Good job.
That they did
gold star from Doug. So
at the end of the day, our responsibilities of the Board of Health will be changed. Is that correct?
There's some accountability and coordination that we need to insert within the agreement.
And there's one other piece that's really important in all of this is the cost assessment. So as the steering committee process evolves, there is a cost assessment of public health services. And I think I was talking to Steph a little bit about this, but they basically are looking at where every penny goes, what does it go for, how much does it actually cost to provide these core public health services, but then also other prevention that the public health departments are doing. And so that cost assessment piece is happening this spring, and so we're anticipating getting that with, you know, April-ish, where we'll have to submit data as far as where all the dollars go collectively that we receive from CDPHE, from CDHS, from all these different funding streams to support public health in each community.
So that's going to be pretty tough, I mean, for all the entities to come up and make the buckets look the same way for the money going in, going out, the rest. So I
think they're trying to get an idea of really how much is it costing and are we meeting the need. I think to my understanding.
No, I understand all that too, but you still got to identify the bucket.
Right.
And then you figure out, and then everybody's got a different size of a bucket, different look for the bucket, you know.
It's a big project, yeah. And so it does, to me, there's been a whole bunch of focus groups that have been held on each of these core services, and they've gotten a lot of information, a lot of input from various sources. There's a lot that's going into this project. It's a huge project. So I think the best I can do is update you as we go throughout the whole project. But
sounds great.
And so looking at the MOU, it looks like it continues until we replace it, right? It's not an annual document?
Right.
Yes. Okay.
But we'll probably be bringing that to the board fairly soon. In fact, once we address
those questions,
these items from the state,
and
once we make a decision about what type of agreement that we need to help fulfill the requirements of the statute.
Great. Thank you.
Can I leave 10 minutes early?
do you want to hall pass? Yes.
Okay. We've kind of hit the high points of our discussion so far today. Is that correct?
Yes. I really don't have anything else on.
Okay. Great. Because I do have a meeting I need to get to on the other side of town.
Okay.
If you don't need me here if I get my
I
hall
pass. I think we can hold
pass,
it down, don't you think?
And I might be a few minutes late coming back, but I don't see anything.
We'll make sure that's noted in the minutes.
Terribly controversial there that you can't deal with without me.
Thank you, Tim.
Thanks.
Did you have other topics?
No.
That's, all right.
That's what I have, unless anybody else has.
I had two things just as I was, I was being facetious when I said I read all of this, but I did look through it, and there were two things mentioned that I was wondering if I could see, which was the local public health plan was referenced and a community health assessment.
Sure.
Are those documents that you could send?
Yeah,
over?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be happy to.
Yep. Do you have anything else, Doug?
No.
You guys have anything?
No.
All right.
Thank you. Oh, sure.
I'll just add a congrats and a cautionary note. I think you guys know last year, Route County got listed nationally
in
several ways.
Yep.
We
take credit for that as the board.
Well, I mean, and you should to some degree. I mean, you know, the county with the most senior women here. But the rubric that they used, you know, look at some things, didn't look at other things. So on one hand, yes, it does truly reflect that we have a healthy county. But it does not reflect the whole county and all the people in it. And we could get into those surveys I did, but I think they've missed some things in terms of what matters. But I mean, it's good news, great news.
Yeah.
And I don't think that just happens by chance. It happens because, you know, some self-selection kind of people want to move here and stuff. But I think it is, I think you guys can take some credit for what the county does for, and Northwest Colorado Health can take some credit for what we have here for public health, but also realize that there's a lot more to do. Can't just say, oh, we're all fine.
Anything else?
I have a question.
Yes.
For the next presentation that we do, what would you like to see? So I'm proposing that we would do a return on investment sort of public health presentation. Are there other things that you would like to see?
And that's going to be outside of our quarterly Board of Health update, right?
Either way.
Do you have what you need on the opioid stuff? Do you want to have another conversation about that?
Do we want to know more about the MAT?
Well, no.
We still don't.
No, I don't.
No more interest.
You know, again, I guess my frustration is that we don't hear nothing. If we don't hear it out of the newspaper, we don't hear it. And we in the newspaper right now, we don't hear nothing out of the newspaper anyhow. So, you know, so my comments about that too. But, you know, so more you guys can keep us filled in on somewhere. And I don't know if that's, you know, weekly doc update or a weekly health update or something. Just even if it's just to the board of things that you guys are hearing and seeing out there. Could, you know, and it's not a crisis thing, you know. But, you know, it's some trends that you guys see and things, you know, just a simple email or something, you know, once a quarter or something, you know, some things that you're seeing out there. Otherwise, I'm taking care of my cows out there, you know, and I'm driving back and forth to work. I'm making sure we get the bills paid, keeping these guys under control. And everybody under control there.
You know, and he's doing a so-so job at that.
I have no idea what might be happening out there. So
no one's under control.
If you guys have things come up that we need to know about, please let us know. Because if they're not going to come through the typical, I mean, hopefully they'll come through Scott, if Scott knows about them. But, you know, I think it's the thing, you know, trusted that you can trust that we read everything we get in front of us somehow, some way, sometime.
So I haven't thought about doing it. You guys want some extra emails and health stuff?
I think, to Doug's point, in whatever way makes the most sense, I don't know if that's email or the monthly update or whatever it is, but I think definitely because we do get asked about some of these, both when we're like at CCI.
No, I get asked to present on the opioid crisis. I mean, what do I know about the opioid crisis, you know? I know what I hear from you guys, you know? It's like, really? So, well, yeah, we're dealing with it. Yeah, we're dealing with the jail, you know? So
that's right, you were on the panel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was on the panel, so then what do I know?
You did a great job, Doug. I think definitely that when there are hot topics or issues that are arising that would be helpful for us to have an understanding of, I think that would be really valuable.
I mean, we could potentially put together what we see as kind of the large things going on in, like, the next 5 years, 10 years, like the aging population. How are we going to take care of the aging population in our region? Like, that could, we could put
care
together some of
these.
No, I'm
know.
Don't you want them to take care of you?
Planning our raid on taking care of that.
I mean, I want to create more work just for the sake of work.
But I think just, I mean, honestly, that you would have more your finger on the pulse of what some of those issues are to bring to our attention, and that that would be of value for us to understand what those are.
It seems like, you know, all of the directors of the county meet on a monthly basis to provide an update.
Right.
And I don't understand why we wouldn't want public health to do the same thing. And I'm happy to help and tag along with you on those, but it definitely seems like we should have more regular communication and you know, some additional stuff that comes over email, but I think it would be helpful to have.
I don't have a problem with that. Is that
no, I would much rather be aware than have the press call me up and say, hey, what do you know about this? I'm going, well, hell, I heard nothing about that. What are you talking about? So,
and if you only need 15 minutes,
yep,
that's fine. Or if you need an hour, I mean, it just depends. I think typically hours are a half an hour just to give a quick update.
Yeah, and again, I don't know, if you don't have anything to, you know, keep us up with, and you know, we're going to be involved with your process on the CHAPS thing. That sounds good. We want to be.
So, about vaping and youth.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's a bill in the legislature for us to outlaw vaping. Well, we don't even have any retail stores in the county already anyhow that sells them anyhow. So we really don't. I mean, our county's different in the fact that we don't have a bunch of retail outlets in our county. So, and yet I would support that concept. I mean, it just doesn't even make any sense.
But that's
the kind of connection I see. Is where you've got legislative stuff coming before you. We've got the local information can inform you on how you may want to use it.
Well, and we're asked to share that information too. And if we don't have it, then so it's hard for us to give our perspective on those things.
Well, great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You all. Yeah. We'll reconvene at 1:00. All right, so we are taking a look at the Emergency Management Performance Grant application.
Yes.
All right, will you tell us a little bit about what this is for?
So the EMPG, or the Emergency Management Performance Grant, is an annual grant that we apply for every year about this time. Last year, we received, we're scheduled to receive, or I said this year, about $60,000. And that accounts for salaries and other supplies and training and exercises and stuff like that. Half of each of our salaries will be included in that $60,000 that they can provide up to. And then the way they do that is you have to develop a work plan. Some of the tasks in that work plan are mandatory, such as having an emergency operations plan and convening a multi-jurisdictional group, like we have our multi-agency coordination group. So 75% of their of whatever amount is authorized will go to the completion of those mandatory tests. The remaining 25% is more discretionary. We can choose other projects, but that to be approved basically by your regional field manager. Our regional field manager is Chuck Vail for this region. So we'll have things there like we want to update our resource management plan, and we want to develop our continuity of operations plan. Those are not mandatory, but they're still authorized, if you will. So, and then we basically give quarterly reports that include the progress we're making on our work plan, and then the financial report as well, which includes salaries, benefits, and what we spent on our budget. So we submit those quarterly and then get reimbursed for what's eligible. So that's really in a nutshell.
Thank you. What do you feel like you were able to accomplish with this grant last year?
Well, you know, I can't say that the grant maybe enabled us to do more. It just would have come out of the county budget, because the stuff that we're doing, would have been required whether we did or did not have the grant. For example, we still need an emergency operations plan, whether the state's going to pay for it or not. So we may have had to cut back on some of our budget. So I don't think there's any particular things we would have been able to do, but you know, some of the supplies we would have maybe had to cut back a little bit on.
Too many questions, Doug?
Yeah. So who's signing it? Looks like you and the
county. Well, there are a couple.
Dan are signing it, and Chuck are signing it.
There are several parts. The only part that is part two here is what requires the chairman's signature. And that's what I put before you. And then there are other parts there where the work plan Dan and I signed, and there's a financial part here that Dan's demand signs. And then yeah, this is the part of the work plan that Dan and I will sign. And then the salaries information and expansion of the budget, Dan Stanad and myself have to sign.
So this is the same grant amount that we had last year?
Yes. And in the guidance for 2019, they say to expect the same amount you got. We got a letter from Mr. Willis, who is the director. And
didn't they cut us down?
They did that. My first year here.
Yeah, they were complaining about we couldn't isolate out the dollars for the wages.
Right, and so because when I got here, I was also working at a comp center. We had to do that. We said 90% of my time was emergency management, so we had to make sure we go through the financials and do only 90%. So then when we came to 2018, I was in the process of purchasing a time tracker system, which we now have, so I didn't put myself under the EMPG for 2018. But I'm going to put myself back on for 2019 now that I can track my time, specifically what time I spent at the comm center, which is not reimbursable, and what time I spent here.
But it doesn't matter then, because we're only going to get $60,000 in town.
Correct. And then what Director Willis here in his letter, he does say, talks about the plan, and I'm trying to find exact language, but he said basically expect the same amount. Because they don't actually get them out until the federal budget comes out. So what typically happens is the states get the EMPG, and then 50% of it goes down to local and tribals, and then they keep 50%. So assuming the budget remains the same, then we'll continue to get the $60,000. Here's what he says. In 2019, each jurisdiction should plan to receive a contract for approximately the same amount as the 2018 contract, barring any unforeseen changes in the funding at the federal level. So our planning factor is to continue at $60,000.
Ready?
I'm ready.
Yeah. Madam Chair, we approve the 2019 EMPG-LEMS annual program paper and authorize the chair and the deputy county manager's signature on that grant.
It sounded like we also needed a finance signature, so maybe just all applicable signatures.
Yes, Dan Stanad will sign a different part, not that one.
Okay. But authorization
to approve it
all,
authorize all applicable signatures would be good.
Thank you. I'll second that. Any other discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much. Do you want me to sign that now?
Sure.
Mine doesn't have a date line. All the other ones do.
Really?
Yeah, that seems odd, right? Should I date it, do you think? The 2018 HUTF mileage certification.
Right.
So pretend I don't know anything about this.
So HUTF is, right, so that's what the handout that Ray gave you, but HUTF is Highway User Tax Fund, and it's essentially a amount of money that we get through the state, and it's allocated to us based on our mileage and how many road miles we perform work on. And then every year I've got to update our gravel roads versus our paved roads. And then this year I made some updates and tried to clean some stuff up that wasn't huge. And then anyway, so then through that we get an allocation of funds for maintenance on our roads. In 2017, I believe our allocation was $3.02 million. So it's a chunk of change, a chunk of our road. It's a third of our revenue for our budget. So this year I made just some minor changes based on some notes that we've kind of carried over the past years. We found a couple of years ago that subdivision that Lynn Halliday lives in off of 43A is Beaver Place and Beaver Ridge, that they had their roads accepted for maintenance back in the like 80s, early to mid 80s. But we're talking 0.076 miles for Beaver Place and 0.116 miles for Beaver Ridge.
Those hadn't been accounted for before, is what you're saying?
And okay. So I cleaned those up, added those to the HUTF. Wagon Wheel Way right across from the Clark store. That was one of them that got added. That one was...
The one that goes to the cemetery?
No. This is on the other side of the ridge from the cemetery. 68 goes to the cemetery. This is, or 60 goes to the cemetery. Dead ends there. This is Wagon Wheel Way. This was another subdivision through the...
In South Route?
Nope.
Nope.
Right across from the Clark store.
Yeah, you can access
I know where you mean. Yeah. Okay.
It's a little dead end cul-de-sac.
The one that accesses the cemetery south of there.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
That's 0.13. Aspen Way in Hans Peak Village was never on there. But... One that got eliminated was we designated it County Road R-17, which was a road that didn't exist from almost behind the Hans Peak Village Museum back out to 129. I'm sure that went away when the highway got redone through there. But Aspen Way goes from behind the Hans Peak Inn out to just in between, what's that place just south of? It's just north of the roadhouse. And it's a small stretch that goes,
it loops from Elk River Road back to Elk River Road?
Yeah, it goes from Elk River Road to Cottonwood Drive.
Okay.
And that was 0.228 miles, so a quarter mile there. We also removed from there the joint portion of County Shop Road that the city maintains now. Maintains from essentially the UPS store back to 40. We confirmed Beaver Place and Beaver Ridge. Aspen Way, Wagon Wheel, and then got rid of R-17 that was on there. So not a huge change from 2017 to 2018. We're talking like a mile and a half of additions and subtractions.
Will you tell me a little bit about the process for all of that? Like, how do you do this?
Well, it's kind of over the years. It's more of a maintenance thing throughout the year. So, like,
you just have like a spreadsheet or something?
I got rid of 18C too as well. Off of that, yeah. 18C.
I knew we'd pay a price.
So basically, you're just kind of making a note throughout the year as you go through if you have major changes in roads, whether you're adding or vacating and so on. And that's kind of because if I go and I claim that we maintain 1,500 miles of road, then we get money allocated based on that 1,500 miles of road. But then you're also on your affidavit, with the CRS, so you're telling the truth that you're actually maintaining 1,500 miles of road when that's not the case. And so we go and it's based on the eligibility of a road, whether it is something that we actually maintain and do. And you can set those levels of maintenance, whether you're doing, a minimal maintenance road as opposed to something like County Road 2017, where we're doing a 27, where we're doing a high level of maintenance to that road, and so on and so forth. And so it's just kind of a constant check that nothing big has changed, and then it's just a true up of maintenance throughout the years. It's not, I mean, this has been going on for way before I got here, six years ago. Yeah. So.
And then, ultimately, is that affected by our Schedule A agreements?
No, we don't put our Schedule A agreements on here. That's different. That comes through the money.
But, I mean, if we take over maintenance of roads that the Forest Service was originally maintaining, then we would add that to our...
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. If it was a county road, for sure. But if, like, Forest Service Road 550, I'm not adding.
You can't add that, right?
Exactly.
Roughly $2,000 a mile?
I think so.
$3 million
at 850 miles.
Oh, 850 miles? All right. at 1500.
They're not all the same reimbursement rates, are they?
No.
Yeah.
Some are gravel, some are pavement.
Right. I just on average, so.
Yeah.
For his dollar number.
Exactly.
So the ones
$3,500 a mile.
Yeah.
Again, there are different rates of recovery.
It's going on average.
Big scope.
Okay.
Big scope.
And then we have some side agreements with other counties, right? We take care of some of those.
Exactly. And then, but those are also based off of AGTF funds as well. Like, Eagle County plows southern county roads for us in the winter.
County Road 1.
So, County Road 1, 4, 1 and 4 are the two big ones down there. So then we'll go and we've got a IGA signed with them based on our HUTF reimbursement and the mileage of those roads. We've got a formula.
We get the HUTF. But then we pass it on.
We pass half of the HUTF reimbursement for those onto.
Just for snowplow.
For snowplow. Correct.
And vice versa.
Right. Rio Blanco pays us, but we give them. That's not so much based on HUTF as much as it is just our general overhead and our time spent for that one. Like, I go through PubWorks, print out what we've done on the Rio Blanco County roads, and then I go and I give them a bill with the backup itemized for that. PubWorks is kind of our tracking software.
Yeah.
So all this is, Tim, is just... Every time something new comes up, I look into it, and I'm like, okay, well, it's new to me. It might be new to her. This is just some quick stuff. The CCI, of course, you know CCI. And so actually the first two pages and then that last page that has the allocation methodology, that's actually on the CCI website. You can get that right off of there.
Is there anything of note in here that you want to draw my attention to?
No.
Okay.
What they usually do is bring in the adjustments that they make from the previous year, which is the adjustments from the previous year all the way back into 82 or something, whenever this thing started.
Exactly.
Somewhere. Again, the other thing is that not necessarily us claiming these roads mean that we might or might not have ownership of them.
Yeah.
Or how the ownership is acquired, or how whether we own them fee simple, or whether they're right-of-way easements and the rest.
Just
an expense reimbursement form to allocate out.
Yeah.
What is the difference in reimbursement HUTF for paved versus gravel?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. Yeah. I didn't have to, well, maybe.
It doesn't get into it in great detail, but 50% in proportion to countywide motor vehicle registration in each county, 60% in proportion to the adjusted lane miles of open, used, and maintained county roads to each county, except mileage for state highways, and 10% proportion to the square feet of bridge deck, and they also talk about paved areas and whatnot. They have different formulas. And
so that's actually just in that tier three.
Yeah, and I was going to actually, if you look at the state website and you click on the distribution process.
Oh, I'll be doing that tonight, right? If it goes that.
Well, I suggest you do it between the commercials when you're watching the Super Bowl. We're going to this commercials. So if you click on this distribution process, it's a huge spreadsheet with handwritten notes that they've scanned, and it's got all these percentages. And I said, I'm not even going to print that.
Oh, okay. I thought you were suggesting that we go look at it so we can figure
but
it out.
If you want to know, I'll study it, and I will come back and
report. Nah,
I think we'll be all right. That doesn't seem like a great use.
But it's a yearly check.
Got it.
So do we have bridge lengths in here, too, on the HUTF?
He said square footage of bridge deck.
I know. It said square footage of bridge deck.
Well, it said brick. Specifically, no, it didn't say brick.
They haven't asked.
So what we're putting down is road miles.
Exactly.
Okay.
It says for bridges greater than 20 feet in length.
So yeah, are we missing out on some revenue? So
I'll have to check into it. That. Yeah, well, I'll talk to those guys about it.
Because we got a fair number.
Yeah, 56.
Yeah.
And so they use the motor vehicle registration as well. That's interesting. So that's all
just
for the tier.
Make sure you have all your vehicles ready. Then we got to talk to Zach.
Right.
How do we get on this second list? No, I'm just joking.
Are you ready?
I am. I'm ready.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve and authorize all three of our signatures on the annual mileage certification required by the Colorado Department of Transportation to support receiving highway users tax fund funding.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, sir.
Doug kind of finished up. We're going back up.
Yes, thank you. So we are looking at the Discovery Benefits Administrative Services Agreement. So I am here to ask you to consider signing the Discovery Benefits Services Agreement. The Discovery Benefits is the vendor that handles our flexible spending accounts. We have a limited and a dependent care and medical spending account, and we've been working with them for a while, and we need to have an agreement signed.
That's a novel thought.
Could you be just a little bit more specific what administering the FSAs are? I mean,
we funnel the money to them. It comes from the employee.
Right.
And so
deductions.
Basically, they the employee submits something to them for reimbursement.
Oh, okay.
So they kind of are the gatekeeper to make sure that we're, you know, following IRS regulations and people are...
So they actually physically have their own bank account that they... write a check back to the employee for.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, that's, and they for some, you can use a credit card. They give you a credit card and you can utilize that, but they are very specific about you must provide receipts. They're
the right
very
documentation
different.
For the payment.
Yeah, it's very different from the HSA. It's much stricter.
Yeah.
Which you wouldn't know from the name because it's flexible, right?
Yes.
And we pay
that's
four.
That's for the IRS. It is quite flexible.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
but we pay $4.50 per month per person who's enrolled. Is that correct?
And we split that with the employee.
So we really, the county pays $2.25 and the
correct.
Employee pays $2.25? Okay.
Correct.
Thank you for that.
And we haven't had any, I mean, it's, we must have been using them forever then, huh? So we haven't, I mean, everything's good with them. I realize why we're going through this process now, but anyhow, so they've been a good vendor for us.
They've
as
been
well.
Good. I think we've been using them for 3 years.
Oh, is that right?
Uh-huh.
So they were probably through the, helped us with our...
Hayes
helped mm-hmm. us select them and
I believe
got
how did
right
we do
out
it
of that.
Prior to that time, did we do it in-house?
No, we had another vendor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
this,
I can't remember who
nightmare.
The vendor was.
Yeah,
so.
No, I'm sure we don't want to do it. That much I know. Well, this sounds like a good value for the county. Madam Chair, I'd make a motion to approve and authorize your signature on the Discovery Benefits Services Agreement.
And the attorneys have reviewed this.
Yes, I see that. Sign it here.
Yes, please.
I mean, I'll wait.
Second.
Until any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.